Okay, I guess the previous one or one before that couldn't be heard at all because it went through my headphones. The idea is, I of course got carried into all these sidetracks, but Priya Rata, and it's about that group thinking, it's about what it's really about. Well, again, me looking back, learning from the past, that quite a few devotees, you know, people came and became devoted, giving their lives, surrendering their lives to God, to Krishna, just faithfully serving the leaders of the group, in this case ISKCON, that they then, well, became members of them. We're told that you must become member of, and so on. I mean, this is a common group psychology thing, right? But then how, and this is what we need to learn from, because it's important, you can't just close your eyes and hope it goes away. That if devotees, children of the devotees included, are treated badly, are suffering, are psychologically not well, not healthy or physically, then we need to look at the circumstances and see, why is it? Is there anything we do wrong here? Because if we then, ignore that problem, just close our eyes and, you know, I don't want to criticize, I don't want to, no, I better just be humble and shut up. Then, as I say, if you see some wrongdoing going on and you keep quiet, then you are also partaking in it, supporting it passively. And that's why I'm raising my voice these days sometimes, because especially if wrongdoings are going on against devotees, then this is very serious. And I mean, how can one expect that a group where devotees are treated badly will be successful, will be blessed by Krishna to flourish? And I'm not talking sectarian, I'm talking in general, a religion or whatever big, powerful religions that are on the planet. If they treat, I would say this is the test of it. If it treats people badly, whether members of that religion or other religions, rather than loving and helping to spread peace and sister brotherhood, then there's something wrong with it. It doesn't work anymore. It's been compromised, at least temporarily dysfunctional. It's not about its name or how fine the leaders look or speak or anything, or what beautiful buildings they own. It's about how we people, including members of groups, treat each other. And when I look back at my life, I'm from a small town in Sweden where people were, they were not fancy or big or rich and all that, as the big city people like to be sometimes. But each one, everyone cared for themselves, did a good day's job. Got an education, got a job, often one that they liked, friends, family, hobbies, a nice place to live. Maybe a balcony to sit on, look at the sunset over the lake. Well, this is how my family was, my father, mother, relatives. And they could sit there and say, now I'm happy. Life is good. Some were religious, thinking of God when looking at that sunrise, sunset. Some were not, but what I mean here is that people, human beings, at least in this country where we are, should have, and I think do expect, such a life. Yes, you get a nice education, properly treated, a loving family, parents, taking care, being with the children, protecting, loving, getting education, guidance into that what you want to do in life. And getting help to get out there and do that. Get your salary, get your home, get your spouse and your children if you so want. And be able to sit there on your balcony also, eating your breakfast. That's kind of human rights. Nothing extravagant. Now, those of us who joined the temple or something like that in those days, ashrams, we gave up all that for God. We became, at least for me, it was like that, became monks and nuns. Not owning anything except the clothes you wore, basically, and sleeping bag, shoes, and a jacket. Anyway, and well, for years I had no home, slept on the floor somewhere, in a youth hostel somewhere, sometimes different each night. And that was the nice thing with it. I loved that. Because I was a brahmacharya monk. That's the freedom and the simplicity and peacefulness that comes with that. Life. But to some, and I fear that we're talking about not so few. They were pulled into this because that's the only proper way to live, right? In the temple or in the group. I can translate this to any group, I think. I'm just using my own experience as an example here. Because I want to make a point, so stay with me, please. Because the ideal, the goal, the thing to do, the way to be accepted, to be good, to be a devotee, is to renounce, give up all that. Don't be independent-minded, don't be attached, don't be materialistic. Just work for God every day and sometimes nights too. Then you are okay. But you have an eternal debt, so you're never really okay. So we should just work harder for our Guru, for Krishna, to see if one day we can actually satisfy God, Krishna. He's pleased with us finally. So work harder and harder. So I mean, as anyone with who has not been in there and adapted to life inside that group bubble, I would say, getting used to it as normal life, will, I guess and I hope, immediately notice that there's something here that doesn't sound basic human rights-ish, especially when you don't have free weekends and never any vacation. Again, for monks and nuns, brahmacharis, and young enthusiasts, such life is great. But when you put that demand on and that expectation on families, for instance, or people who have not chosen such an austere life as a brahmachari, brahmacharini, but who is anyway treated that way because they happen to not be married when they join the movement. So in this way, maybe they don't find anyone to marry. So then they can go there year after year after year. Sometimes even forgotten, sleeping in a bunk bed somewhere, serving, serving, serving. Oh, you're not serving good enough, not much enough. You can't live here. Okay, leaving, going to another temple. Can I stay here? And so on. And finally, I saw, and I kind of feel guilty for one such case. When somebody who shouldn't have given up his apartment and his job and everything to join the temple ended up homeless. Because he was not good enough to live or serve in any temple anymore. So in this way, I've seen it, cases where lives of ordinary young Swedish boys and girls who had their home, who had their job, who had their lives functional, were broken to pieces. And yes, the case I feel guilty about is the case of Eric. You know who you are if you're still around here, and I really apologize. But again, I was a fired up brahmachari still, I think. Just renounce, give up your job, give up your material life, including your apartment and everything, to Krishna. Just move in here in the ashram with us, and your life will be perfect. Become a monk. So he finally agreed. Well, some of us were a bit pushy. I don't think I was that pushy. But suggesting, maybe you have come now so many times and you like this, maybe you should just want to become a bhakta here and live in the temple and in the ashram. And one day he decided to do so. So yes, I took a pickup van and drove over to his apartment and helped him to empty it and drive all his stuff to the temple. Just as I had done with my stuff, I rented a pickup, put my apartment in it, drove it to the temple, and donated everything to the temple. But as I came there, he sat in his sofa, and I could see doubts. And he was like, I don't know if I want to do this. But then, had I been the way I am today, at least, I would have stopped. But I went like, oh, come on, it's just a mind. decided, and here I am, we pick up and everything, so come on now, let's just do it. And he surrendered. And I guess you could say it destroyed his life. And yes, one day, Christmas Eve, I was on my way back to my apartment where I stayed. And he stood there lurking in the stairway behind the elevator and jumped on me and attacked me. I managed to get away, but he tried to pull me into the apartment, and God knows what would have happened. Whatever would have happened, I guess I would have deserved it. I guess he could fairly rightly so, to some extent, blame me. Although, of course, each one of us make our own decisions and are responsible for our own decisions, so what can you say? But yes, you learn the hard way sometimes. But I also know that even if we mess up, Krishna takes care of us. And those of us who do these things thoughtlessly, immaturely, sometimes lacking empathy and feelings for others, just being sworn to our mission and our vows and so on. We need to learn the hard way as well, which I think I got my dose of that. Hope I learned it well enough. But again, wherever you are now, Eric, sorry. But that's the point of this long talk. That however this group should look, congregation, this and that, temples here and there, whatever, it's so important to first of all treat each other well. Help each other that we will have a home and good food and good, well-functioning families, and that the children will grow up happy, healthy, strong. And get good, satisfying, happy lives. It's not that because you're a devotee, you don't deserve that. But no, then you're a materialist, so I should stop you from that. I will help you by keeping you poor and suffering. Well, I live in that big house over there, but you know, that's because of, it's my duty as a big shot. Anyway, I guess you get the point, but it's very, very important, and I'm not talking of principles and rules. I'm talking about how we devotees of God here, or people in general here, each one of us, experiences their lives, our lives. And we should want to see each other happy. Look, they have a nice little home, sit there watching the sun set with their families. And in their hearts they can feel content and good and okay, and think of Krishna. And if you think they don't think enough much about Krishna, then well, be a friend, be there as a friend. Don't come banging on the door, entering in there to preach. Just be a good friend. And show by your own example. Look, Krishna is everywhere and life is so happy. When we live with that consciousness, that awareness, not that we have to do and work and struggle and collect and in order to be accepted by Krishna, by God. We just live the life we live. The awareness of the presence of God in everything and everyone. That's all there is to it. And if someone comes saying, no, you should work as a whatever, I don't want to say slave, but you should work for my group that I'm leader of, and work for our leader, and otherwise you're no good. And well, we've seen these cults come and go. It's time to grow up. It's time to mature now. And to learn ourselves how to live with this Vaishnava culture, this beautiful transcendental culture, not by imitating Indians and doing cosplay of different kinds, but by whatever culture we live in, live as devotees. Be the best friends of everyone, especially devotees. Support each other. Be trustworthy, real friends. Be tolerant, compassionate. I mean, not just pretend to be. I mean, is there any person we like to be around more than such a person? A real friend? That's what a devotee is.